Welcome to the Shared Desk, episode 97. Inching ourselves towards 100.
I know. It feels like an absolute miracle that we made it past episode 96, considering all the different ups and downs and technical errors that we were dealing with. But we are here for episode 97 of The Shared Desk. I am your host, T. Morris.
You've been called the Da Vinci of our time. What do you say to that?
Absolutely ridiculous. I don't paint.
That's true. I don't paint.
And what do you say to your other nickname, the Merchant of Death?
That's not bad.
That isn't bad. I kind of dig that. It's got that Metallica vibe happening. I kind of dig it. And sitting across from me,
I'm Pip Valentine.
That's our spirit animal right there, Agatsuko. We're kind of in a metal mood because...
We just put up a Halloween decoration.
We just put up a Halloween decorations. If you just missed that, you can check our previous stream where we were. We just did a pop-up stream. Pop-up streams, by the way, if you're new to this stream, if you're new to this channel, this is the Team Monster channel. I usually bring a little bit of Destiny to your life, but I also do this thing called pop-up streams where I will just, you know, just do a pop-up, just, you know, come
Hello.
Up and say, hey, what's up, here's what I'm doing. And we just finished our preliminary Halloween decorations.
Yes, I think we got the majority of them.
We have a few more touches we need to do inside, and then we unveil them on Halloween. We don't go completely off the hook, but when Halloween comes and people are going through the streets,
gangsta.
That's what we hear over and over and over again.
And in fact, we are joined today by our new Halloween spirit animal,
Disco Trick Twitchy.
Disco Twitchy, who is a skull covered in plush
crushed
purple velvet.
Yeah, I picked him up and I was like, oh yeah, I gotta have this.
This has got to be our new friend. So he's gonna hang out with us.
So for those of you who are finding us from this weekend at the fabulous James River Writers Festival, thank you very much. For those of you who are finding us from my stream, thank you very much. We are The Shared Desk. This is episode 97, and we are here to talk about the aforementioned James River Writers Festival.
Yes.
That's going to be our... That's going to be the show pretty much on a whole.
I think it's a good convention to talk about for people who want to start conventions, because it's very well run.
It is. It is absolute. I mean, it is.
There are some primo things they do.
Clockwork. It was run like clockwork.
And there are things that they do that other conventions should really do.
I agree.
That's how Dad did it. That's how America does it.
And James River.
And it's worked out pretty well so far.
You really need to stop obsessing over that fuzzy skull. If you want fuzz, baby, I can just rub up against you like that.
No, he's a nice
fuzzy. I can
fuzzy.
Rub up against you like that.
He's a
Come
nice
on.
Fuzzy purple skull.
I can rub up against you like that with this beautiful fuzz.
I think for now I'll stick with that.
It's finally growing back in, Chap, and now I'm in that itchy phase.
Yeah.
So where do we begin? Well, first off, the James River Writers Conference has been ongoing.
Is this the second one that we've done?
This is the second one we've done. This is the eighth one
they've done. Oh, nice.
And the James River Writers group, they just call themselves the James River Writers.
Yes.
And the James River Writers are a local Richmond-based group.
Very
active. This is
my
hometown. They're extremely active. They do everything from talk shows to workshops to everything.
Lots of meetings, you know, support each other, all of that good stuff.
Really good group. We kind of came across them. When was the first one? So this is our second one, but the first one we did, what, 4 years ago?
I want to say it was about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the one where they invited me.
So I got to set the stage for you, Chat. I am the Richmond-born native, you know. I mean,
I am not from Richmond.
No, not with that accent. You are not from Richmond. But I'm the Richmond-born native, and Pip gets the invite to be a speaker, and they go, if you'd like to bring your husband, T. Morris, as your plus one, you're more than welcome to. And so the running gag was, hello, James River Writers. My name is Pip Ballantyne. I am your guest here, James River Writers, and here is my plus one. And I didn't.
Well, at least this time they invited
them
both of us.
I did not let them live.
Well,
it
that's
down.
Probably why they invited both of us.
I think they made sure that they invited both of us. But so the James River Writers Conference is there once a year. I guess you could
say blowout extravaganza.
Their throwdown.
Yeah,
it's their throwdown. And
Held at the Richmond Convention Center.
So
every
so
year what, that we've been.
Yeah, and yeah. That, yeah, that's where
it just happens there.
Right. So how would you describe the oeuvre? Because I did try to stream off of the off the convention floor. That didn't work out so well. Yeah. Turns out that I got spoiled when I went to TwitchCon, and I did not have the
Wi-Fi.
Well,
you know, it's not James River Writer's fault, because conventions, they charge through the nose for Wi-Fi because they know they've got you.
And if you're TwitchCon, the last thing you want is people going back to their hotel
TwitchCon
rooms.
TwitchCon obviously had to.
They had to have it. James River, not so much.
Yes.
Maybe get out a tweet, and that's about it. Yes, David. The reason I'm in, and so real quick, for those of you who are just listening on the feed, we are streaming this live. We're streaming the recording live. So you're missing Pip's somewhat obsessive nature
fondling
over
of this purple skull.
The purple skull. I put us in just chatting because this isn't that is a velvet skull. That is a velvet skull, David. And Pi just said, nice skull, Pip.
I know. We cannot obsess about this skull.
The reason we chose just chatting over talk shows and podcasts is I've noticed an uptick in new audiences and new streamers in just chatting versus talk shows and podcasts. So that's why I'm here. That's why I'm
chatting.
We're chatting. We're chatting about the James River Writers Conference. Now, even though I did try to stream, I wanted to get your opinion. What were your thoughts on the crowd at the James? This was actually the second time in a row that they have sold out.
Yes.
At the James River Writers.
So definitely, I think it must be obviously getting more popular.
Yeah.
People are aware of the, you know, there's a good quality of people that they are getting in there.
Put the skull down, please.
I can't put the skull. All right, I'm putting the skull down. There's a good quality. There's a good representative, diverse slice of writers there, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
There's a variety of genres as well, literary, you know, all our favorite genres, literary, romance, everything is represented there, which is really nice.
Another big pull for the James River Writers Conference, if you're looking to get started in a writing career, if you're looking to move forward in your career,
they have a good amount of agents, right?
There's a nice turnout of both editors and agents that show up, as well as writers.
Yes, so they do quite a bit of pitch meetings, and they have the dating game for agents, which
I feel embarrassed about because apparently my name was called, but I'm
there was a lot going on.
I missed that.
Inappropriate.
It wasn't inappropriate. It was just I was exhausted on day two, and I just all I wanted to do was just
do our panels,
and then come home. And so it was at around 2:00, 2:30. I looked down, and I was like, I'm missing something. Oh, I'm missing the dating game. Well, what are the chances of my name being picked?
And 100%.
Yep.
100%.
Yep. Now, that being said, I did have a pitch meeting. They managed to get in a pitch meeting with me an agent that dealt specifically with thrillers and suspense.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to talk to her about my book.
So you were able to talk to the ones that would have been dealing with thrillers
Yes. So I was happy about that. And then to kind of pump it up even further, I met another agent during the event. Turns out she was a gamer, and I don't even know how I got into pitching. I told her I wasn't prepared to pitch, but and we're going to talk about how I got a little courage juice in me before that event.
Yeah, but Saturday night.
But I did pitch to her my book, and she proceeded to tell me some of the challenges. She didn't tell me that it was a bad idea. She just said, here are the challenges you're going to be facing.
Yeah, which is fair enough.
And I appreciated that. So it gave me something to think about. Now, Pi just asked how many people attend the
Writers
Conference. It was
really hard to tell because
we only took up a section, not the whole conference floor, but just a section.
Yes, it was just a sort of a long section. I don't know. It looked real at times. It looked really empty, but that was because everybody was
in a panel.
In the panel,
everybody was in a panel,
and the panels were largely well attended.
Yeah, I would go out on a limb and say somewhere between 1,000 to 2,000.
Yeah, I would
easily
think
1,000 to 2,000.
Yeah,
and it, like I said, all the panels were very well attended. Mm-hmm. Not just the ones about the business, but the ones about craft.
There were some good craft panels.
There were some really nice stuff. Mm-hmm. So what did you talk about?
My first one was crafting compelling characters. That was on the Saturday, and it was packed.
It was.
There were people standing at the back, yeah. And you know, that sort of thing.
Standing room only. Yeah.
I had a little imposter syndrome because I was sitting there.
You drive me crazy about this.
I know, but look, when the moderator is introducing you and she's like, okay, here's a PhD, Pip, and a scientist that goes to Antarctica. Yeah. They just sort of and I was the
good luck, Guardian.
Yeah, I mean,
I was the only real genre writer there, I think.
Yeah, you were.
Oh, one of the professors, she wrote historical fiction, but not spec fic or anything.
Doesn't necessarily mean you were the nerdiest person on there. There was another panelist up there who had written a book about a black cosplayer who had been killed at a convention, an incident with the police and yada yada yada. So that was actually quite fascinating. So the nerd quotient was very high.
Yes.
But it wasn't a science fiction convention. This was a writing convention.
And the other thing that's different about the James River is that when you go into the rooms, it's not just chairs. Everybody has like a table. So it's almost a bit more like a university lecture.
It is.
Everybody's like scribbling away notes and they're very earnest and very focused.
Yeah, the amount of note taking at this event is pretty pretty intense.
Yes,
to say the least.
People are getting
intense.
Their money's worth out of the event. Oh yeah. So, and that was a good panel. The other good thing about the James River that many conventions could learn from is that the moderators are always well prepared.
Oh my.
They don't just go, well, everybody just introduce yourself.
Yeah, no.
And tell us a bit about yourself. No, those people have read your book.
At least one of your books. Yeah.
They've read your bios. Yeah. They have them written up. They introduce you in a proper fashion.
I mean, to give you an example of this, Chad, Bill Bloom, who is one of our moderators during the weekend.
Collaborator with the ministry.
He's a collaborator with the ministry. He's a really good guy. Bill actually wound up becoming a collaborator with the ministry's podcast, Tales in the Archives, and over at ministryofpeculiarcurrences.com.
Mm-hmm.
And we all met at the very first one. And I remember he tried to read, I kid you not, he tried to read all of Pip's books, all of my books, and then all of our books combined. And he actually apologized to us on the first panel.
That he hadn't got through them all.
And I'm just like, are you kidding me?
Yeah,
dude.
Yeah. So the moderation.
They prep hard.
The moderation level is, I can't think of another convention that does it as well that we've been to.
Well, I mean, there are,
There
are individuals.
Individuals at science fiction conventions. But across the board, an event.
Nothing comes close to James River.
No.
Nothing comes close to James River. The amount, like, for example, we had Charvette Mitchell.
Yes.
Who was our moderator for the Podcasting Essentials panel.
Yes.
And she sent to us the day before. She sent to us the questions she was going to ask us. I mean, they were all up for grabs, and I was like, wow. I mean, they went deep. She had some fun light ones. She had some really thought provoking ones, and the panel just went super smooth.
Well, I think that's
very
just
smooth.
Because everybody's so well prepared. The panels go very smoothly. There's always a nice amount of time for questions.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so this year they actually introduced something new called Shop Talk.
Yes.
And it's more or less a coffee klatch. Now, if you don't know what Shop Talk is, and I say it's a coffee klatch, and you're like, okay, that's great. What's a coffee klatch? It's basically a one-on-one.
Yeah.
You can, and some people did bring coffee. or tea. Yeah. But they brought in something and they sat down at a table with me and we talked about a specific topic or specific question that they had in their minds.
It's a bit more intimate than, you know, like the 100 people in a...
In a panel,
yeah.
This is truly a one-on-one situation. And what was funny was that I was supposed to be flying solo, but Pip wound up joining me as well because I guess we are a matched set, and you can't
salt and pepper.
Yeah, you can't want to thank your mama for a butt like that. That. Since you can't break the box set, we wound up both talking about. The topic that I've been given for my shop talk to share with other people was the topic of write what you don't know. Mm. Now, originally it was supposed to be about the importance of research, about the importance of making sure that you've dotted your I's, crossed your T's, and you make sure that you've got sources, you know, for your sources and things like that. What it wound up turning into, and I was both a little terrified and a little empowered by the topic was, well, I want to write about this. In fact, I remember what it was. One of the individuals said, I want to write about transgender issues, but I am not transgender myself.
Yes.
I am LGBTQ, but I am not transgender. And I said, then you need to talk to somebody.
Yes.
And she goes, well, what if I get pushback from people that are saying, you're not transgender, why are you writing this? I said, well, here's the conundrum. And Chad, if you want to chime in on this, yeah. I invite it, because man, this was a great topic. I said, okay, we could wait. We could wait for the story that you have or something similar to it. And wait for a transgender author to write that. Until then, there is no representation of transgender in the fiction that you're wanting to write. But then what if you reach out to the transgender community? What if you reach out and you tell them, this is what I'm doing. I want to make sure I get it right. Can you help me make it right? Can you help me make it better? Can you help me? And that was what we did when we wrote The Ghost Rebellion, because we were reaching out to Suna Dasi over at Steampunk India. And Suna was our cultural editor. She was like, okay, you got this right. You didn't get this right. You need to tweak this. You need to do that. Whoa, you guys really went there. Holy cow, that was great. You know, I mean, stuff like that. If we hadn't written that, then the Ghost Rebellion wouldn't have happened.
No. Well, the thing is, what she was talking about was having multiple, I think she said four or five multiple strand point of view characters.
Right.
So I think we said to her, you know, if it was writing from the first person point of view,
it gets very tricky.
And it was, you were trying to represent a trans character, I would feel a little uncomfortable about that.
So would I.
She's writing different characters, a diverse set of characters, a bit like Sense8. We talked about that.
Which we did talk about.
And she does know people in the trans community.
Right.
So that they can beta read and check that she's getting, you know, things right.
But what the point we were
yeah,
coming
but if you
at,
don't if you don't
if you
write,
don't write it,
yeah,
then that story doesn't get told.
Yes.
and then people go, well, we're underrepresented.
Well, if you only write stories about yourself,
man, that gets,
well, my stories of white New Zealanders are going to be very dull.
It depends if you're writing about the All Blacks or not.
Yeah, but they're
go
not
all blacks.
White.
Yes,
they're definitely not all white.
They're not all white.
But so yeah, I mean, it's a very tricky, and especially right now when people are talking about own stories, that sort of thing.
Yeah, sure.
It is a tread with care. But I definitely think that when you have your acknowledgements and you say thanks to such and such for, you know, their their advice or their insight into a certain community, then you are giving yourself at least some coverage there. Now, the second person who was talking about writing an alternative universe in which...
And this was interesting too.
In which Native Americans had not been overrun by settlers, white settlers.
They'd actually pushed back.
It was very interesting, but I would find... like I think we said... That's a harder sell because you're creating a whole culture that doesn't exist and you're trying to find... they were talking about not finding, you know, everything in the museum is sort of a fourth grade level.
Right. And she wanted to go above that.
The research had to be more than that.
Right. And but then again, that means reaching out to the culture, reaching out. And I regret.
You would actually need face-to-face conversations with people about
And I regret not telling her the story that I told you recently. There was a play that I did back when I was a professional actor called Out of the Whirlwind. And it was about the slave revolution of Gabriel Prosser. So I believe that was his name, Gabriel Prosser. But basically, he led a slave revolution in Richmond.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it didn't work.
It didn't take off.
But it was a monumental moment in history where people were going, maybe slavery isn't all that. Maybe they're not as happy as we think they are.
Because they seem to be wanting to revolt.
Yeah, that's really bad. And the thing is that the play itself, the play is centered around three slaves, and there are three white guys that show. I was one of the white guys.
Thank goodness for that.
Yeah, but the white guys that showed up in the play, they were kind of in the background. They were like the alternate voice of the, you know, oh, let's see how we can play with this and let's see how we can spin this, this is the slave revolution and all this stuff. So you got to see sort of the backdoor dealings of what was happening at that time period. But then at the center of this play were these three slaves. This whole play was written by a white Jewish lady.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it was powerful. I mean, we did this play not only for paying audiences, we also did it for the inner city school kids of DC.
Mm-hmm.
When they met the playwright, they were like, "We're really happy that you told this story because, you know, I'm a young African American. I didn't know this story."
Yeah,
and it gave me that perspective of if she had not written this. This story would have been told eventually, but it would have been told, you know, maybe 5 years, maybe 10 years later, versus right now in this time at this juncture.
It's just like at the moment, you also need to make space for the people who actually have a connection to that story now.
Yes,
because now you're getting. I mean, we saw at James River a lot of African American.
Yes.
Writers, which was amazing and great.
Right.
So they need to be able to tell their stories. So, yeah, I felt a little... I was fine with the one about the trans character because the trans person was not the sole thing.
Right.
But the other story about writing about an alternate timeline where Native American people were not... That is a tricky one. And I think we did... the right thing by telling her you're going to get pushback on this.
Yeah,
definitely.
We told them both, but it was more for her.
Yes,
but to bring it back around to James River Rivers Writer Conference, the James River Writers Conference. That's not as easy to say. It really isn't.
Leroy, you were just stupid as hell.
That's enough out of you. So anyway, you get an idea, though, of how...
Oh, it got intense, didn't it?
Very intense over the weekend.
And those shop talks were... I think it was a great idea.
Yeah, fantastic idea. I hope they come back. And then, now, it doesn't... Now, the entire weekend was not this intense.
I want to
make sure, yeah. Like, one of the panels we did was talking about podcast essentials, as we said earlier. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions we got was, how hard is it to come up with a clever name for your podcast?
Didn't really seem that difficult for us. But.
Right. But I mean, we talked about the process of, well, how do you name a podcast? It's no different than from how do you name a book or how do you name
how
a short
name
story?
A cat?
Yeah, or how you name a cat. So yeah, I would labor over the perfect opening theme, and it would drive me nuts. So we had some lighter topics.
You did one on branding, right?
I did one on branding, which I should mention for my Twitch viewers. Yes, Twitch Dad came up in conversation.
Of course he did.
Twitch Dad came up in conversation, and I talked about what was the funny thing was it was actually led by Maureen. Maureen was the agent that I mentioned earlier.
Oh, really?
Who was the gamer?
Oh, she was doing better. She was the.
What?
Moderator? Or
no, no, no. She was one of the panelists, and she was talking about, and it was really fascinating. She was talking about from an agent's perspective.
Oh, okay.
Why brands matter, why brands are important. And then she mentioned how you have to have a plan when you lean in. And when she said lean in, the first thing that was triggered for me was, in fact, Twitch Dad. And I said, well, since we're talking about leaning in, let me give you the evolution of this particular brand that I'm now kind of embracing.
What did she think of that?
And she just kind of looked at me and just went, oh, my God. She probably thinks I'm a knucklehead after this. after this.
Well, that's a brand, too.
That's a brand, too. That truly is.
Can I get a hell yeah?
Hell yeah!
But overall, The whole good evening, Unicorn. How are you?
Hey, Unicorn.
The overall feel of the James River Writers Conference is about being better writers and being better professionals as
yes,
well.
Yes, it's a very professional convention in a lot of ways. But
in a lot of ways.
Definitely the angle that they go in onto the panels with. It's all about, you know, craft, marketing. You know, ways to improve your, you know, if you're a small business person, which basically you are when you're a writer.
But the creative ones, but the ones about are also good too. Bill, he moderated us in a panel on world building.
Everyone loves world building.
Yeah, and we got a chance to talk about, you know, like the pitfalls of world building, about how sometimes I've met authors who have been working on a world building project
for years,
for like 4 or 5 years, and I'm like, so how far are you in the book? And they go, I haven't started yet. I have to finish world building. And I'm sitting there going, okay,
yeah,
okie doke, you go right ahead.
Oh my God, I am surrounded by idiots.
I just have strong opinions on that.
At some point you have to stop and write.
You have to stop with the world, stop with the world building, and you actually start getting words on paper, and it's not it is not.
And your
easy.
World might change actually while you're writing, putting characters in it.
It's
like building a set.
Pi just said, "Was that Cyber that said that?" No, it was not Cyber that has been world building for 5 years. No, that is not. No, stop that. The takeaway that I had from the world building panel is that world building is different things to different people.
Mm.
It can be everything from the actual environment to what's the geography like, mm, to what is the time period you want to work in. And it was fascinating how we all kind of danced around the topic of what exactly is world building.
Mm.
Oh no!
It's the set dressing for what your characters are acting in front of.
No. So going back to the entire weekend on a whole,
mm-hmm,
the experience of James River Writers. This is probably also asking you the question: do you think water is wet? would you want to do it again?
Absolutely, and I would also recommend it for anybody who's actually can get there and is interested in writing, because I think it's really got a lot to offer.
It
obviously
does.
Because it's sold out 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
So definitely look to go next year if you're serious about writing. We met a couple of people who are in the midst of working through their process, and a lot of them looked like they were really invigorated.
Yeah.
And I know I wanted to write afterwards.
But I gotta say, Richmond, not completely about the James River Writers Conference.
Overcooked on the bottom, crispy as fuck, and it looks like Gandhi's flip-flop. What a shame.
What the fuck did you put in that sauce?
You're about as fucking consistent as pigeon shit on Trafalgar Square.
Get out of my kitchen!
That's probably one of the most epic teasers, bumpers, stingers I've ever put together.
It is.
God, that was fun putting together. Okay. We're going in the kitchen. We're talking a little about the food scene. It's what we do here on the shared desk. We've got the writer stuff, and then we got the stuff we do behind the scenes. And what we're
actually,
here
behind the scenes in this case.
Yeah, really behind the scenes. So If in case you missed it, don't worry. We're going to drop into the show notes. The live feed that I managed to get out. So basically, we were looking for somewhere special to go for our anniversary. It was our 8th anniversary this past week, and we decided we were going to celebrate it while in Richmond. Now, originally, the original plan was we were going to have dinner at Pâtre. Pâtre. I was close. It was something French. Pâtre, which was the
restaurant.
Yeah, the attached restaurant to our hotel. Would you like to tell them a little bit at the hotel?
Oh yes, we stayed at the Linden Row Inn, which is a collection. It's actually six buildings which are all joined together because it's a row, and they I think it's the largest preserved section of Neo-Greek.
It's pretty.
It's an old building from the 1860s and 70s, I think.
It's actually got almost like a New Orleans vibe to it.
It does.
When we went to a romance conference called Authors After Dark, and we were staying at the Royal Sonesta, and they had this really cool architecture touch where you would go out onto a balcony and the balcony would overlook the courtyard where people would be having
dinner or lunch. Courtyard as well in this.
And Linden Row was just like that.
Yes, and it's it's also on the grounds of where Edgar Allan Poe would have played as a child.
Yeah.
It was supposedly haunted.
Yeah, a lot
Didn't
of history.
Didn't see any ghosts though.
Didn't see any ghosts, but a lot of history. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Just a beautiful place. And Pâtre just opened their doors.
Yes, we had breakfast there.
Yeah,
it was very nice.
Yeah, it was great.
But I don't know why I thought about this, but I was like, you know where I want to go? I want to go to a speakeasy. Maybe it was the history. I don't know. But
there is a lot of history in my hometown of Richmond.
Yes, there is.
And it's been coming back hard, so I'm real proud of Richmond.
So T's like, well, I don't think there's any speakeasies in Richmond.
It wasn't even think. It's like, there are no speakeasies in Richmond. Richmond's not that cool.
Au contraire, there's in fact a top 10 list of speakeasies in Richmond.
Yep, that's exactly what happened. Yep.
But this one looked particularly exciting.
Yeah,
and
it did
right up our alley. It was called Grand Staff and Stein Booksellers.
Yes.
Unleash the Fury.
I was like, okay, so
being a former research librarian, I obviously had to do some research, and apparently
this is pretty awesome.
Need to know the password to get in, and the password is on their Facebook account, apparently. So we got the password, which was
Bite Me Valentine.
That
was not the password.
Are you sure?
Are you sure? Last week.
Wait, was it this one?
God, you're weird.
Is that it?
God, you're weird. No. It was.
Oh, I got it. Wait a minute. I got it.
Shit, just go real.
That would make a good password.
Yeah, that would, wouldn't it?
But it's not. Last week's one was Flaming Youth.
Right.
Which is actually what the male equivalent of flappers were called.
Right.
So we took our Uber. We did not drive.
No, we did not drive.
No one was doing no driving tonight except the Ubermans.
No, we did not. Right.
And womans. And you go down to Shocker Bottom, which is, now that's the lowest part of the hills, because Richmond's got many hills, right?
Richmond's got many hills, and Shocker Bottom is literally at the bottom of what's called Shocker Slip.
Right adjacent to the river.
Yes, right
so
off the river.
It used to flood a lot, but
still floods a lot.
Still floods a lot.
Still floods a lot, yeah.
So anyway, you go over to Shocker Bottom.
Right.
We got out of our Uber outside the booksellers.
Mm-hmm.
And you go in.
Right.
It's a very unassuming looking building from the outside.
It's just got
the name of the bookseller.
Gray building. And you walk
can't
in.
Can't see through the windows.
And you can't see through the windows. And it's just a and it's like one and a half bookcases.
Yes.
That's it.
It's not very big.
Now, the books are real.
It's probably about the same size as this office.
It's probably the same size as the office, yeah.
So there's one bookcase in front of you, a bookcase to the side, and a lady seated behind the counter.
With an old school card catalog.
Card catalog. Oh, I love an old school card catalog.
So she said, "Are there any books that you know that tickle your fancy?" And we're like, "Oh, okay, we're really playing
along,
this song, okay." And there were legitimate books that were in there. And we said, do you have any books on flaming youth? And she went, oh, I see. And she goes, do you want me to see if we have a table? And we were like, you know, we'll just play our luck, you know, just so long as we can see the book on flaming youth. And then we chit-chatted a little more. And then she was like, okay, well, let me get that book on flaming youth for you. And then she literally pushes aside one of the bookcases.
And you go in.
Welcome to level 7.
Straight up.
It did feel a bit like
it
that.
It did. It was straight out of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We walk in, and it is a dimly lit, so dim you can't see the stools that you're going to sit on. But you just walk in, and they're all Edison light bulbs everywhere. There's a beautiful logo painted on one side that says...
Exposed brick.
Exposed brick. It says Grand Stephan Stain's Whiskey. Yes. And
upright piano for some tinkling on the ivories.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then, of course, there was the menu.
We had 2 bags of grass, 75 pellets of mescaline, 5 sheets of high-powered blotter acid, a salt shaker half full of cocaine... A whole galaxy of multicolored uppers, downers, screamers, laughers. Also a quarter tequila, quarter rum, case of beer, pint of raw ether, 2 dozen amyl.
It wasn't that bad.
I don't think your friend Dean would have appreciated that. But no, the... and of course, whiskey barrels with tables. We sat at
A whiskey barrel with table.
Now, also, the servers are all dressed in flapper outfits.
That was another
big
plus.
There's a patroller. There's a small courtyard if you wanted to sit outside. All of this concealed behind the bookcase.
It was. First off, the space itself is absolutely huge. It's gorgeous, and I fell in love with it. Mm-hmm. And the other thing about it is they're only playing old school swing music
from the 20s and 30s.
And let's talk a little bit about the menu. Really, let's talk about what really was on the menu.
Oh my gosh.
So where do we start with? The Scotch list or the Scotch flight?
There are flights. They had...
two whiskey flights.
Two whiskey flights, a rum flight, a Scotch flight, and then they had a tequila flight.
Yeah, a tequila flight. A good tequila flight. Mm. The Scotch flight, I went on ahead and yes, you'll see it in the stream. I went on ahead and actually had the Scotch flight. And I actually found a brand new favorite Scotch, and it was just stunning. The Scotch was really high test, and it started in a really like logical order. Like you start with a Johnny Walker Black.
Yes.
Which for my Scotch connoisseurs in chat, Johnny Walker Black is a blended Scotch, and it's it's good.
Yes.
Not great, but it's good. It's good for
it's a
blended Scotch.
It's a good way to start.
Good way to get the palate warmed up. So and then it ended with a Balvenie 14,
which you'd already familiar with.
I was familiar with Balvenie, but not this particular one. And it was Balvenie. So
and then we also had a rum flight because why not?
Why not?
Which ended also with another one we knew, which was the Kraken Spiced Rum, which was very good. They also had a very large, obviously a large section of cocktails because cocktails were actually mostly invented in speakeasies to mask the taste of the horrible bathtub gin or perhaps the moonshine that might kill you.
But the section that we gravitated towards were, in fact...
The mules?
Yeah.
The Moscow mule seems to be very popular these days. You know, they come in a little...
served in a little tin cup.
I thought it was brass.
Well, brass tin. It was a little metal cup.
And they have quite a nice selection of mules.
Now, which one did you have? You had you had the Maui.
That was I had the Maui. That's the one I had.
Yeah.
I had the Sharpshooter cocktail.
That's true, and that was in fact that did.
It did shoot me. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And the one that I had was the Kill Devil.
Ah, yes, with the habanero.
With the little bit of habanero in there, and man, did that perk me up.
And then we also ate there because, you need something to mop up that.
Were we squiffy when we walked out of there? Yes, we actually did walk out of there. I did take a tumble, but that was when I was stone cold sober.
You were sober and you took a tumble.
I was sober and I took a tumble. And I was a bit like Dr. Johnny Fever in that episode of WKRP. My reflexes actually improved the more I drank.
I'd
like to think that. But we did have food there. And
the food was amazing.
I would say the food was just on par with the drinks.
Yeah, it was a really good experience.
We started with a baked brie that had...
The baked brie had pears.
Yeah.
And I think it might have had cranberry in there as well.
Just a phenomenal...
No, it had pear and brown sugar.
Yeah. And then we got cake to the entrees. The now, if you put a crab cake, if you put crab cakes on your menu, Pip gravitates to that.
Yeah.
She's like, I want to know how good your crab cakes are. Normally, I do not do the seafood. Mm-hmm. I will, if I'm in the mood, I'll do crab. And it's got, but it's got to be
seafood can go wrong.
Yeah,
so you're really taking a shot in the dark. Really.
As I was looking over the menu, that instinct kicked in and said, "Order the scallops. Just order the scallops, or the scallops, or however you want it. Scallops. Just get them in your face, and then get them in your belly." And I'm like, "All right, I'm going to try the scallops." And even Pip looked at me like, what?
Yes, I was a bit surprised you didn't have like a steak.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, but man, I had that steak and
no, you had scallops.
Sorry, could you put steak in my head? I put no, you still
I'd love to put steak in your head.
Yeah, I know. But no, I had those scallops and this was me for the rest of the night when Pip was just looking at me doing this.
Oh no, finish your tweet. So that's fine. Just give us a second.
There was a lot of tweeting.
There was a lot of tweeting.
But the food was very excellent. And then once we'd had that, we finished up with the classic.
Oh, yeah.
Bread and butter pudding.
Bread and butter pudding.
And it was really, really good.
Bread and butter pudding.
So that was a good night.
It was a really good night. The food was exceptional there. The service was also really good.
Oh, yes.
And the staff, they weren't just
very knowledgeable,
not just on the food, not just on the alcohol, but also on the history.
Yeah,
history of the building, the history of speakeasies. You know what they
did
do.
You know
there.
Why it was called a speakeasy?
Enlighten us.
Because you had to speak quietly.
Oh, that wasn't
otherwise
there.
People would no. We were not quiet, but in the historical speakeasy. You would speak quietly the words to get in, and you would also probably
want to like keep the tone down a little bit.
Keep it down a little bit. Yeah. But, you know, also in speakeasies, they had a lot of entertainment. So you would get musicians and all that sort of things. And I noticed that Grand Staffenstein hosted burlesque brunches.
Yeah.
I was very interested to see that. They also do Bunko, which has also got a history of illegal gambling. And what was the other thing? Oh, and poker nights.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't need another reason to come back to Richmond. I mean, there's Scott's Addition, where you've got all these great breweries, and you've even got a meadery down there called Blackheath Meadery.
You've got a place where you can play video games and drink.
There's I think it's called the Circuit.
Circuit City?
Circuit, no, just the Circuit.
Isn't it? It's not called Circuit
City. No, Circuit City was the failed electronics chain. But Circuit, the Circuit, and then of course we got Proper Pie. Yes. Stone Brewery is just around the corner.
Got a meadery.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on. There's a lot going
Burger
on.
Burger Batch.
Yeah, and spelled Bach, but pronounced Batch.
Don't ask me why.
I know. In all seriousness, chat, if you're looking for stuff to do. If you're ever driving through Virginia.
If you ever need to go to
Virginia,
a cool little town.
Richmond's the place you want to go.
Yeah.
Richmond's the place you want to go.
It's got food and alcohol.
And what you really can't do better than that. And if you don't drink, that's fine. Go anyway. Go to Grand Staffenstein you know, get the food. The food is even better. There's just a lot to do in Richmond. A lot to do and a lot to see. Great town. So we need to wrap up this episode 97 of the Shared Deck. Closing in.
On that elusive 100. We're going to have to think of something to do.
Yeah, something really special to do.
Two more episodes and then we've got to figure it out. We are already starting to fill up on things to do next year, but...
Yeah, we are.
Some of them are cool. Some of them are very cool. Some of them are in states I haven't been to yet.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Real quick, though, I did want to say, for those of you who have already given to this charity, thank you very much. Throughout this month, for those of you who are, again, regulars to the stream, and for those of you who are listening to the podcast and like, what are you talking about? You can go over to twitch.tv/TheTMonster, and you can watch on Thursday nights at 7 o'clock something called The Blind Leads the Blind. This is where I... and my potato skills in first-person shooters serve as Sherpa to blind gamer Steve Saylor. And Steve, the blind gamer Saylor, is in fact legally blind. So we are celebrating 1 year of doing Blind Leads the Blind. And Steve found a charity for us to represent all through the month of October. And that charity is called Able Gamers. They come up with technology. They come up with mouth controllers, with vision trackers, and specially enhanced controllers for people who have disabilities, but they have also have the desire to play video games. And we originally started off, we wanted to raise $500 for Able Gamers. But thanks to a monster raid from a very popular YouTuber, we wound up raising over $5,000. But we are leaving the charity open all month long.
Get as much as you can for them.
That's, in fact, what we're trying to do is we're trying to reach a vanity goal of just over $5,600. And here's why.
Why 56?
The reason why $5,600 is because Steve was doing some research, and he found out that on Tiltify, that on the charity service that is taking care of all the money, we're in the top five earners. We're in the top five.
Competitive spirit, huh?
Yeah, we're in the top five earners, and the funny thing is, everybody around us are all certified 501(c)s. We're the only two that were just a couple of knuckleheads that said, hey, let's raise some money and do some good with our video games.
So to help knuckleheads everywhere.
So to help knuckleheads everywhere and give them hope, we want to see if we can crack into the top three, maybe even just get beyond the top two. The reason why we're not going for number one, that's owned by Mountain Dew.
Okay. If two knuckleheads can beat Mountain Dew.
If two knuckleheads can beat Mountain Dew, then man, we got a future ahead of us.
Yeah.
We got a future ahead of us.
What is the current, what are you at right now?
We are just over $5,300, and okay, we're trying to reach $5,600. Sparky, just in chat, said, came for the raid, donated, and joined Twitch to follow. Glad I did.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Sparky. I really do appreciate that.
Look at his beard growing.
You can actually watch on my Twitch stream. You can watch a highlight where I did isolate the point in the evening where, because we had hit $5,000, I said, okay, because we hit $5,000, the beard's coming off. Pip has never seen me without facial hair.
Your daughter has never seen
me without... My daughter has never seen me without facial hair.
It's a horrific moment for us.
And I don't think they like it, Chad.
I'm still recovering.
I really don't think they like
it. Luckily, at least the stubble is making me feel a little bit better.
Yeah, but now I'm in the itchy phase, as I said at the beginning of the show, and that's 50 Shades of Suck right there. So, chat, if you want to get in touch with us, apart from coming to this stream, following, clicking on that purple heart, that gives you a follow. It doesn't cost you a thing. But if you sub, you get a few extra perks from along the way.
And sending some awesome little emoji
emotes.
Emotes.
Emotes. I'm teaching her, chat. If only I'd written a book that could teach you the lingo of Twitch for Dummies. Yeah, there is that. But along with that, you can find me at tmorris.com, where you can see me blogging on a weekly basis now. It feels really good.
Fancy.
Where can they find you, honey?
PJBallentine.com.
And you can also reach to either one of us at t@tmorris.com or
pip@pjvalentine.com.
T Monster on Twitter.
Philippa Jane on Twitter.
And of course, you can find us on the Instagrams at the T Monster.
I think I'm PJ Valentine.
You are PJ Valentine. I know that for
on
a
Instagram.
Fact. Oh, yeah. And of course, you can reach out to us with your comments, with your chat, with your questions about upcoming shows, what you'd like for us to talk about, anything like that, at our voicemail at 703-791-1701. Drop us a voicemail. You can do that through WhatsApp as well, and we would love to hear from you. Stick around, chat, because we're going to have a little exclusive back and forth with you all completely off pod, and it's just a little intimate extra hour that you get for sticking around with us and hanging out on stream. But until next time, thanks for watching, thanks for listening. Enjoy the ride.
Catch you later.